You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Oh, welcome back, everybody. I'm Pete LaBarbera with Americans for Truth About Homosexuality with my good friend John Kirkwood, who is pastor of Grace Gospel Fellowship in Bensonville, Illinois. And I finally got it right there, John.
Amazing.
I know.
I'm impressed.
I'm ADD. Okay. And we're here again with Peter Sprigg, our good friend from Family Research Council. Peter, are you on the line?
I am.
Well, our first two interviews have been very informative. We've gotten great feedback, Peter. It's wonderful to, and it's a privilege to make many people familiar with your work who aren't. And we're going to be talking about a paper Peter wrote for the Family Research Council called The Top 10 Myths About Homosexuality, and we'll get into that. But this is sort of an odd morning because we're recording on Thursday the 28th. The ruling on Obamacare just came down. A lot of disappointed conservatives. We're here to talk about the homosexual agenda, and Peter Sprigg is one of the leading experts in the country opposing it. Family Research Council does some great work. I used to work for Family Research Council. A lot of my friends have worked there. It's a tremendous institution, and it's important because the role of Family Research Council is sort of, in a lot of ways, the leading conservative family organization opposing so many of the bad things that the left is trying to do in Washington. And Washington is a corrupting town. Peter, I hope you haven't been corrupted up there.
I don't think so.
Well, they never think so, Peter.
Well,
it just sort of happens. But you're a good guy, and I'm sure it's you've got the Lord holding and others holding you accountable.
I was going to say, the Lord and my family keep me grounded. So.
That's right. Peter's a family man. He lives in Maryland. Briefly, Peter, talk about your work for PFOX, because we haven't gotten to that at all. What is PFOX, and what do you do, and how active are they on these issues?
Well, PFOX is Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays and Gays, and it's a nonprofit organization promoting tolerance and equal rights for ex-gays, for people who were formerly gay but have experienced a change in their sexual orientation.
But I thought those people didn't exist, Peter.
Well, that's that's the odd thing. Other persecuted groups, people at least acknowledge their existence, but with ex-gays, it's the one group that people don't even acknowledge they exist. And personally, I got involved with PFOX when we were battling sex education curriculum in the Montgomery County, Maryland public schools, and I happen to live in Montgomery County, Maryland, although I don't send my son to the public schools. And I offered, my assistance, my expertise, and so forth to do battle with this curriculum. And so PFOX was a party to a lawsuit against an earlier curriculum that was actually thrown out by a federal judge. He actually ruled that that this curriculum was unconstitutional because of a particular provision that actually included disparaging language about religions that disapprove of homosexual conduct. And ironically enough, the Establishment Clause, which is often used against conservative Christians, was used against this liberal secular school district in saying that they were committing an establishment of religion by disparaging particular religions for their views on homosexuality. That version of the curriculum was thrown out, and as part of a settlement agreement, PFOX was given a seat on a Citizens Advisory Committee, which reviewed the proposed new curriculum. PFOX asked me to represent them on that committee, which I did for the next 6 years, from 2005 to 2011. And then they also asked me to serve on their board of directors, which I've continued to do. So PFOX has been particularly active in the schools, distributing flyers, for example.
If I could interrupt you on that, Peter, this is, I think, something amazing that they're doing. They're sort of taking the direct action approach. of getting around the media by directly passing out information. Now, is this just in Maryland, and what type of information do they pass out?
Well, yes. In Montgomery County in particular, they've had, now unfortunately there's some news on this week, but I'll give you the background. They've had what they call the Backpack Flyer Program, which allows nonprofit organizations in the community to distribute flyers to students in the schools. Now, this is an important way of getting their message out for a lot of community groups like, you know, the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts or the Little League and so forth, in order for people to know what they're doing. But because it was open to any nonprofit organization, some other groups have tried to use it. A Christian group, the Child Evangelism Fellowship, did it, and they were blocked at first by the school district. They took the schools to court, and they won, and it was ruled that that was an unconstitutional infringement. So they could not limit this program based on the viewpoint or the content of the of the flyers. So PFOX, with the defense of that court decision, has distributed flyers telling kids that, you know, don't decide the future of your life based on how you feel right now, that people, you may experience same-sex attractions now. That doesn't mean you have to identify as gay. And in fact, there is such a thing as ex-gays. People can change their sexual orientation. Every time we sent these out, it created a mini furor from our sort of counterparts on the other side, PFLAG, the Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, which is a pro-homosexual group. And I'm sorry to say that they complained the last time, and the school board has actually reviewed this flyer program and decided to do away with the flyer program altogether in the middle and high schools. And it's quite obvious, it's simply in order to silence PFOX.
Right.
Quite shocking that they would basically punish every nonprofit organization in the county just to keep the ex-gay message out of the hands of students.
Wow. Wow. And what do you expect to happen with that?
Well, I'm not sure. This just happened like 2 days ago, and I don't know if our lawyers, I mean, we've been to court over various things before. We've been represented by people like Liberty Counsel and so forth. So I don't know if they see a potential for a lawsuit here, since it was the clear intent was to silence us. We certainly will continue to use whatever avenues are available to us.
Right, right. Well, Peter, thanks for your work at PFOX, and I really think PFOX, for the amount of money it has, which is very, very,
very little.
They're sort of like Americans for Truth. They do a lot for a little.
Right.
Unfortunately, we're in that small donor club, so if anybody wants to make a donation to Americans for Truth, you can do that right on the website. You can also give PFOX a gift through PFOX.org and Family Research Council at FRC.org. Okay, Peter, before we get to your booklet, The 10 Myths About Homosexuality, I want to talk about a few things. Number one is, we have a new article up on the AFTA website about this new insidious attack on the Boy Scouts. And I think this is quite fascinating. It's applying, you know, this sort of global diversity, so-called inclusion values to the Boy Scouts. And what happened is, a guy named Jim Turley, who's the global, they put that in there, the global chairman and CEO of Ernst & Young, is now using his very influential position as a board member on the executive board with the Boy Scouts. He's using that to push them to change their policy against open homosexuality in the Scouts. And folks, I think everybody needs to be alerted to this. We need to support the Scouts. But what's interesting, Peter, and I wanted to ask you about is, you know, this idea of, you read the statement from this Ernst & Young. Let me read part of it here from Jim Turley of this accounting firm Ernst & Young in Chicago. Ernst & Young is proud to have a strong record in GLBT inclusiveness, that's, of course, homosexuality. As CEO, I know that having an inclusive culture produces the best results, is the right thing for our people, and makes us a better organization. My experience has led me to believe that an inclusive environment is important throughout society, and I am proud to be a leader on this issue. I support the meaningful work of the Boy Scouts in preparing young people for adventure, leadership, learning, and service. However, the membership policy is not one I would personally endorse, as I have done in leading Ernst & Young to being a most inclusive organization. I intend to continue working from within the BSA board, that's the Boy Scout board, to actively encourage dialogue and sustainable progress. So here we have, inclusivity being used to basically say, do what we want, scouts, go by the liberal way on homosexuality, else we're going to keep barraging you with criticism, as the homosexual activist movement does.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I read an article just the other day, which I wish I could remember the author or where it was, but they were drawing the distinction between pluralism and liberalism, which I had never quite heard that way before, and describing pluralism as a system in which there is freedom for different groups to hold the different beliefs and to act in accordance with their beliefs. But they contrasted that with liberalism, which is sort of what you're describing there, is forcing diversity within every group. And when you force diversity within every group, essentially what you're saying is no group can maintain its own distinctive identity.
Right.
You're saying the Boy Scouts cannot maintain its own distinctive identity as an organization that is rooted in concepts of godliness and manliness and so forth that may not be shared by everybody in society, but that's fine. They can form their own organization.
Exactly.
That's the great thing about pluralism.
Form the Gay Scouts. Go for it.
But, yes, I mean, I think that obviously there is that emphasis in the Boy Scouts upon the character, and there's also emphasis on protecting them from the possibility of predators as scoutmasters.
Well, leave it at that, Peter. We got 10 seconds of the break, and of course, I don't think most parents want to send their son out on a camping trip with an openly homosexual man. I certainly wouldn't. We'll be right back after the break with Peter Sprigg. Back to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarber. We're talking to Peter Sprigg. I'm here with John Kirkwood and of Grace Gospel Fellowship, a tremendous church in Bensonville. Look it up. It's right near O'Hare Airport. John, really quickly to you, and Peter, you feel free to comment as well. What's so aggravating about the left is how all the words they choose, all the euphemisms, seem to be exactly the opposite of what they say they are. In the name of diversity, they're really about not being intellectually diverse. They don't want to. In fact, I was actually dropped from a panel on diversity sponsored by Diversity Inc., which is a diversity magazine, because a guy with the Human Rights Campaign, which is the leading homosexual lobby, complained to the other people on the panel and said, we can't have this. So,
because you were too diverse.
Too diverse.
What they believed.
Peter, do you think the public is really starting to catch on to this scam?
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, another comment I read somewhere once was that the liberal idea of diversity is a world in which everybody looks different, but everybody thinks the same. and that's not really the kind of diversity we need in this country. We need a diversity that allows people to be free to disagree with one another, including the freedom to disapprove of homosexual conduct.
Right. Now, another question here, guys. What's also sort of depressing, I think, about this thing, but we'll see what the response is that Ernst & Young, this CEO, now feels comfortable enough or confident enough that America is becoming a pro-homosexual nation that he can publicly go, mentioning his own company in this lobby campaign against the Boy Scouts. I mean, this is at one time that would have been a shocking idea, homosexuality in the Scouts. Now a major corporate figure feels he can publicly lobby for it, really on behalf of his company.
Yes, the thing that strikes me, in a number of these stories that have come up about corporations, especially taking these strong pro-homosexual stance, is that they seem to be under the impression that this is not even a controversial issue anymore. They seem to be under the impression that there is no risk to them from taking a pro-homosexual stance because everybody agrees with them. Mm-hmm. This is the way all decent people think now.
Right.
And they don't understand how out of touch they are with ordinary Americans. And certainly in the case of the Boy Scouts, if they were to change their policy on homosexuality, I guarantee you their membership would plummet. it would plummet, and alternative organizations would be formed.
Well, John, let me go to a quick question. Both of you guys are men of God. Peter's a former pastor. John, you know, what does it say about, I mean, you're a pastor. If it's true that the major corporate world is now, you know, practically unanimously pro-homosexual, I mean, you know, that doesn't speak well for our future as a nation.
No pun intended, but in bed with the homosexual movement. Yeah. Listen, I think Kraft Foods is going to find out a little bit about this, too. They came out with their gay Oreo, believe it or not. And
and there was General Mills before that, which now is endorsed homosexual marriage, essentially, in Minnesota.
Target is giving money to the Family Equality Council, selling gay pride T-shirts and donating all the proceeds to a pro-gay lobby group.
Where are we as a nation spiritually when you see that sort of thing? Because these companies used to represent America.
You brought up language, and the first sign of the death of a civilization is the first casualty, I should say, is the language, and euphemism comes in. And, you know, the idea that Bill Maher's show is politically incorrect is absurd, and these kinds of things, and their embrace of the word diversity. I think the major crime of the left, and I do think it's inspired by the father of lies, is that they project. Projection is what they'd call it in psychology. Everything that they make a claim about us is something that they practice. In other words, their own sins. They say that we censor books, and it's actually they're the biggest censors in the world. And they say that we lack diversity. And as Ben Stein pointed out in his movie about intelligent design, no, they'll get you fired. You can't even bring up intelligent design as a professor. And now, of course, the biggest area where you see these crimes being committed is in the pro-family, pro-God tradition, where they're trying to make, I think Michael Savage said, in a world where that has embraced perversion, righteousness becomes the new pornography. And we are the pornographers now. If you stand for sexual purity and God's way, we are treated like pornographers were in another time in this country.
Well, now, Peter, your booklet that you've written for Family Research Council is called The Top 10 Myths About Homosexuality. Is diversity one of those top 10?
Let's
start with number one.
Number one is people that are born gay. This is are you really raising your sword to Lady Gaga, Peter?
Well, the number one myth is that people are born gay. Now, this myth serves a purpose, a political purpose for the homosexual movement, which is it makes people think that being gay is like being black or like being female, and therefore they should be protected against quote-unquote discrimination the same way that racial discrimination or sexual discrimination should be protected against. So they want to put themselves in that legal category. That's why they propagate this myth, not because it's true.
Right.
And this myth was given its support in the early 90s by a set of three scientific studies. I won't go through them in detail, but none of them have been replicated. Some of them have been contradicted by later studies, particularly studies of identical twins, where more recent studies of better samples of identical twins have found very low concordance rates. In other words, if one person who is an identical twin is homosexual, a very small percentage of the time is their other twin also homosexual, which essentially destroys the idea that there's a gay gene. So the best evidence is that while there may be some biological factors that have an indirect influence on a person's propensity to become homosexual, the primary influence is developmental factors that occur in childhood.
Yeah, and on that one, can we just reiterate briefly, Peter, what we talked about last week, which is this new study, which shows that there are a lot of causative factors. I mean, dysfunctional homes are a factor in the onset of homosexual ideation in a person's mind. So I mean, that again seems to offer evidence that it's a causative factor, not an innate thing.
Well, exactly. There's no evidence. And I mean, I'll believe that people are born gay when there's a doctor or a scientist who can, you know, be at the birth of 1,000 babies and predict accurately which ones will be gay when they're 25 years old. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
Right. So I
think we can dismiss that myth pretty easily.
Right. And briefly, Peter, I want to add a side note that something you probably don't know, even though you're an expert. One of the guys cited in your paper, Dean Hamer, who is a homosexual activist who purported to find a genetic marker for homosexuality. I was covering a PFLAG event, and he was the speaker, and I was there, and I thought, well, I'm just going to be honest. I went up afterward to introduce myself to him, and he knew who I was. He started screaming in this room of PFLAG parents. PFLAG is a group for parents who think the way to love their son or daughter is to endorse their homosexuality.
Parents and friends of lesbians and gays?
Yes. So there's Dean Hamer, who came out with this study, and he finds out that he's met Pete LaBarbera. He starts screaming that I want to kill homosexuals, that I'm a stalker, and he's doing this in front of these parents. And it was just the most bizarre experience, and that shows you the kind of these are not dispassionate researchers. These are people with an agenda.
Right.
Go ahead.
That's something that a lot of this research is done by homosexual activists themselves, as you said.
Yes. Okay, now let's go. Myth number two is related. You have in your booklet, and this is available at frc.org. Just plug in Peter Sprigg and the top 10 myths about homosexuality if you want to get this. Myth number two is that sexual orientation cannot change. Talk about that one.
Right. Well, this is related to the first. Again, they want people to believe that sexual orientation is an innate characteristic like race, and therefore it should be treated like race under our discrimination laws and so forth. But the problem is that sexuality is inherently fluid, and there are thousands of men and women who have testified to a change in their sexual orientation, one or more aspects of their sexual orientation, their attractions, their behavior, and or their sexual self-identification.
Right. And, John, you know, this goes back to Bible times. There were people who were involved in homosexuality and got out of it.
My favorite passage in Scripture to quote when I'm dealing with those who are caught up in the bondage of same-sex attraction is 1 Corinthians 6. And there was a man who, was countering me the other day, and I said to him, look, I'm in 1 Corinthians 6, the passage that gives a list of sins and talks about those people will not inherit the kingdom of God. And then it goes into a very bright spot. If I could just share it with you. Know you not that the unrighteous shall not inherit the kingdom of God? Be not deceived, neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor effeminate, nor abusers of themselves with mankind. By the way, translated homosexuals in the RSV. Nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor extortioners shall inherit the kingdom of God. And I stop there and I say, look, if you can't find yourself in 1 Corinthians 6, 9, and 10, you're not an honest man. Because you're in there somewhere. And I'm in there on multiple occasions.
Right.
But the good news is 1 Corinthians 6, 9, and 10 is followed by verse 11. And such were some of you.
Right.
It appears that the God of the Bible believes in redemption and believes in change.
Right. And Peter, we don't believe we're better than people. We don't celebrate our particular besetting sins.
Well, that's right. And one comment I want to make on this too, though, is that sometimes the view is that if you have even a fleeting same-sex attraction, it proves you haven't changed. And I don't think that should be the standard.
Well, let's talk about that after the break. Yes, because your myth number three is that efforts to change sexual orientation from homosexual to heterosexual are harmful and unethical. These are all the myths that keep coming up again and again in the debate. We'll be right back with Peter Sprigg of the Family Research Council.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour with Peter Sprague. Peter, I sort of cut you off. You were talking about how if you have a fleeting thought, that means you haven't changed. This is becoming a big controversy within evangelicalism, this idea that, now we have people like Alan Chambers of Exodus International, the leading umbrella group for so-called ex-gays, although I don't think they even call themselves ex-gays anymore, but he's saying that most, 99% of people who are, homosexual, still have thoughts. Talk about this controversy.
Well, yes. I mean, I always want to emphasize that sexual orientation is not one unitary characteristic. It's really an umbrella term we use for three different things: a person's sexual attractions, their sexual behavior, and their sexual self-identification, whether they call themselves, gay, straight, whatever. And those three are not necessarily consistent in every person. We assume that they'll always be 100% consistent with each other, but that's simply not the case. So I think when you have a person who at one time in their life self-identified as gay, engaged in homosexual conduct, and experienced exclusively same-sex attractions, and then that person goes through a process of change, whether it's counseling, whether it's a spiritual experience, whether it's just some sort of change in their life circumstances, and they come to a point where, A, they no longer identify as gay, they identify themselves as straight, B, they are perhaps married to a person of the opposite sex and engage in exclusively heterosexual conduct, and three, they have very few same-sex attractions and much more heterosexual attractions, but maybe they still have occasionally a fleeting same-sex attraction. It's meaningless to say that that person has not changed,
right.
that person is still gay.
Right.
That person has changed in a dramatic way. And you might just as well say that a heterosexual person who ever finds himself attracted to someone other than their spouse is actually not faithful, mm-hmm. even though, they're actually an adulterer, even though their behavior and their commitment to their spouse is unshaken. We don't want to have this straw man of you have to change 100% or else you haven't changed at all. Significant change is possible.
Now talk about this myth number three. I'm going to read it straight from your booklet. And again, the booklet title is The Top 10 Myths About Homosexuality. It's available at frc.org from Peter Sprague. This is a big one now, the homosexual lobby. Efforts to change someone's sexual orientation from homosexual to heterosexual are harmful and unethical. Talk about that.
Yes. This is the second argument that people, the homosexual activists, use against so-called sexual reorientation therapy or against the ex-gay movement. They say, that it doesn't work, which was the myth number two, and B, that it's harmful to even try. They really want to shut down the possibility of anyone getting sexual reorientation therapy on the argument that even if they want it, even if it's what the client wants, they shouldn't be allowed to have it because it will do harm to them. And we see that now as finally taking effect in a law in California that's actually passed the state Senate and is under consideration in their assembly. Which would actually ban this type of therapy for minors, for those under 18, altogether, make it illegal to offer this kind of therapy. And it would require a caveat, unless it's been amended since then, but it would require that people offering it, even to adults, would have to say, now I have to warn you in advance that this kind of therapy does not work and will cause you harm. But you can still do it if you want. And that's totally contrary to the evidence. Now, again, none of these therapies are guaranteed. There's no therapy that has 100% success rate. That's true for any kind of therapy, for drug addiction, for alcoholism, for depression. There's no one can guarantee 100% success. But there are therapies that have been successful, and there are other people who have changed without having therapy.
Yes, and there are, and I constantly remind people that there are also many, many people who've never been interviewed for these studies. They don't want to talk about their past. Maybe they got born again as Christians or whatever. And there's just more people out there. I think with the people like Wayne Besson, who's a very vocal and nasty homosexual activist, what they want to do is they want to try to make examples of a few failures, so-called, people who tried to change and then they went back on it. And some of them call themselves XX gays. They want to make examples of that. And with the media in tow, because the media is so pro-homosexual, like a cheerleader these days, they're trying to create the impression that nobody can change.
Right. And the ironic thing is that if you read some of the academic literature or some of the homosexual academics who are not necessarily on the front lines of the political movement, they will acknowledge that people can change. They will acknowledge, oh yeah, sexual orientation is fluid, people's sexuality is fluid. But ironically, they say, oh yeah, you can change your sexual orientation, but you can't change it by trying to change it. People who try to change it can't change, but people who don't try, maybe sometimes they do. Okay, I mean, now, it's just irrational.
Yeah, now talk briefly about Robert Spitzer, explain who he is and how he's sort of flip-flopped, but his research still stands.
Right. Robert Spitzer was a psychiatrist who back in 1973 was active in the process by which the American Psychiatric Association removed homosexuality from its DSM, the official list of mental disorders. So he was a pro-gay hero for many decades. But then in about 10, 12 years ago, he was challenged by some ex-gays, specifically by the late Anthony Falzerano, to consider the stories that they had to share about the changes that they had experienced. And Dr. Spitzer, while he was a liberal, was an intellectually honest one and said, okay, I will do that. I'll take a look at your stories. And he interviewed 200 people who had reported some measure of change, gave them a detailed, structured interview, and concluded at the time, in a report published in 2003 in the Archives of Sexual Behavior, that yes, he was convinced that these people had experienced a real change in their sexual orientation. Well, of course, he was immediately vilified by the homosexual activists and has been under an unrelenting campaign of vilification ever since. And earlier this year, he said, well, he's changed his mind, and he said that, all this study really shows is what these people say about themselves, but there's no real reason to believe them. Now, the fact is, the evidence, though, some people are saying, oh, we should stop citing him and so forth. The evidence in his study is not his opinion. The evidence is the testimony of the 200 people. So the evidence remains, and people are free to interpret that evidence as they will. His changing his opinion about his study does not change the evidence on the record.
Yeah, he feels bad because he's been pressured by these very vocal and intimidating homosexual activists. Let's move on to number four, Peter. This is a big one that's stood for many years now, and still people believe it. It's amazing that it keeps coming up. Myth number four, 10% of the population is gay.
Yes. Now, this dates back to the work of Alfred Kinsey, the notorious pioneering sex researcher of the 1940s. But even he did not say that he did not believe in sort of this immutable concept of homosexuality. He had a scale, a sexual orientation scale, but he said that 10% of males are more or less exclusively homosexual for at least 3 years of their life. Nevertheless, this was taken as being 10% is gay. And
well, also, he was interviewing people. It was not a representative sample of the population.
No, definitely not. More recent and more reliable samples have never shown anywhere near 10% of the population.
What do you tell people for gays and lesbians?
Well, you know, for years I have quoted the National Health and Social Life Survey, which came out in 1994, which said that 2.8% of men and 1.4% of women identified themselves as either homosexual or bisexual. So clearly less than 3%. Now, more recently, Gary Gates, I believe, who's at the Williams Institute, a pro-homosexual think tank out on the West Coast, did a study where he looked at five different surveys and concluded that about 3.5% of the population may be homosexual. So that's a little bit more than that earlier study. Either one, it's way less than 10%.
And I think there was a study that said that the voters, it's 5%. So perhaps they're overrepresented in the voting population.
Right. But, you know, there was also a recent survey done where they asked, they did a poll and asked members of the general public what percentage of the population they thought was homosexual. And it was really shocking because a significant percentage of the population thought that 20% or more of Americans are homosexual. So the homosexual movement has been successful in deceiving people into thinking that homosexuals are just ubiquitous.
Yeah, and I say the media too. Okay, we got a minute here before I don't know if we're going to get through the whole thing, Peter, but let's do in the next minute myth number five: homosexuals do not experience a higher level of psychological disorders than heterosexuals.
Well, homosexuals actually experience higher levels of mental illness and substance abuse across the board. Now, the response that the homosexual activists usually make to that is, well, of course they suffer from depression and so forth. It's because society persecutes them. And they offer that as the lone explanation. The weakness in that is that even in cultures and societies which are already far more accepting and affirming of homosexuality than the United States is, such as New Zealand or the Netherlands, they have found that these rates of mental illness are far, far higher among homosexuals than among heterosexuals, which suggests the problem is not society's attitude. The problem is inherent to homosexuality.
I thought it was always homophobia. Oh, well. Yeah, that's what they try to say. Okay, we're talking to Peter Sprigg here, and our next myth we're going to talk about is that homosexual conduct is not harmful to one's physical health. There are plenty of studies which show that that is not true. We're talking with Peter Sprigg of the Family Research Council. Our website at Americans for Truth. Make a donation as americansfortruth.org. Thanks again, folks. We're listening to Americans for Truth Hour. We're in our final segment of a three-part interview with Peter Sprigg. And, Peter, I know it's going to be tight at the end, so right now I'm just going to thank you for agreeing to this interview. And we've certainly benefited, as has our listening audience, from your extensive knowledge on this issue. We're talking about Peter's paper, 10 Myths About Homosexuality, the top 10 myths. And we don't have much time left, so let's zoom through these, Peter. Myth number six, homosexual conduct is not harmful to one's physical health.
Well, this is one that's very easy to debunk because there's plenty of material from the federal government, from the Centers for Disease Control and so forth, showing that homosexual men in particular have by far the highest rate of infection with HIV and AIDS, and but not only that, but other sexually transmitted diseases as well. And I've always quoted the Gay and Lesbian Medical Association, which actually has a convenient top 10 list of their own of 10 things gay men should discuss with their healthcare providers and 10 things lesbians should discuss with their healthcare providers, which gives a list of all the things that they're at elevated risk for.
Okay. Now, Peter, our next myth is number seven. Now, we don't really have to do too much on this because we talked about it, about the study on gay parenting, but it's children raised by homosexuals are no different from children raised by heterosexuals, nor do they suffer harm. And briefly, I want you to, both you guys, quickly, I gave something to John here. When I was at the Philly Gay Pride, we went over there and we observed the Philly Gay Pride Festival and as well as the parade, which, by the way, was considerably smaller than Chicago's, which I was at last weekend, which is, so Chicago is really a bastion of homosexual activism. But one of the booths at this thing, Peter, was something called TLA, which is basically a porn distributor for gay men. It also sells non-pornographic movies, I think, but they're, I think, one of the world's leading homosexual pornography video companies, and there they were giving out, you know, basically a catalog. I just gave it to John of hardcore homosexual porn. John, just briefly, your impression.
I just want to say this to you, Peter Sprigg. There are times when it is indeed a great blessing not to be in the studio with Peter LaBarbera. And this is one of those times, because I just open this and my mind has been seared now, and it's going to take quite a lot to clear it. For just to looking at two or three pages,
it's just
of
a
this.
Catalog.
The idea that this would be out where children could see it is it, there's just so many the pictures. I can't even describe it, how foul.
But now,
and
John,
disgusting
let me set
is.
It up quickly. Yeah. You know, they would say, oh, it was in a bag and it was passed out. You know, and the kids wouldn't see that catalog. But the point is, and Peter, this is to you. What other circumstance could you ever think of where there would be a hardcore X-rated porn company giving out, you know, included in a festival where there's lots of young kids? I mean, it's just bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And it illustrates the kind of a larger point that I've sometimes made, that the homosexual movement is part of the larger sexual revolution, which basically believes that, you know, that anybody should have any kind of sex they want anytime they want, and nobody should say anything about it, and that there's nothing wrong with, you know, taking pictures of it and so forth and distributing that pornography actually can help people's sex lives and so forth. It's just outrageous.
Yeah, and the adult homosexual culture is made for adults, and yet we're constantly seeing it being put in contact with teenagers. You always read the gay literature, and they say children 13, you know, for people 13 to 24, these gay centers like the Center on Halsted in Chicago, where you essentially have the most vulgar and promiscuous and just extreme homosexual adult behavior in the same building as, like, for example, a gay youth club. It's what you see repeatedly in San Francisco and in these gay cultures.
Well, yeah, and you know, again, there's kind of a bait and switch with the homosexual movement, because to appeal to more mainstream people, they say, oh, this is about who we are, this is about our identity, and you know, when people like us talk about the actual homosexual conduct, they say, oh, no, it's not about sex, it's about who we are. But then you go to an event that is geared towards the homosexual community, and it's largely about sex.
Right.
So that shows that, you know, that's kind of a fraud.
Yes, and of course,
it's not about sex.
Yes, and when I was at the Philly Gay Pride, there were the go-go boys grinding and gyrating, and there were a lot of kids around.
Well,
so I think the homosexual parents are redefining what is acceptable as a parent, just like they've redefined everything else, redefined marriage, redefined the word gay. Now they're basically saying through their actions that it's okay to have this very deviant, licentious, you know, culture around young kids, because they're forced to see it because the parents are bringing them there.
And there's much greater effect on the kids. We've seen from something we've talked to Peter about recently, that study that showed somewhere between 15 and up to 70% of children raised by lesbian moms will be homosexuals. And so your myth number 8, homosexuals are no more likely to molest children than heterosexuals. In just the last few weeks, we've had prominent homosexual activists arrested for child porn. We've had Dan Savage say that... make that statement about pedophilia.
What did Savage say on pedophilia?
He doesn't always think it's that it may not always be wrong.
Well, there's the person who's attracted, and
yeah,
that's a separate from the behavior. Again, so that's
right,
sort of mimicking the gay activist line. You know, some people are naturally drawn to be.
You had a television announcer say that he felt sorry for Sandusky. I mean, are they becoming more bold about the NAMBLA movement, the pedophilia thing?
Well, yeah, let me to talk about this, because this is perhaps the most, at least in the eyes of the homosexual activists, the most inflammatory charge that we make about homosexuality. I want to clarify what we're not saying. I'm not saying that most child molesters are homosexuals. I'm not saying that most homosexuals are child molesters. And I'm not saying that, you know, what we're just saying is that it's in proportion, as a proportion of child sexual abuse, homosexual child sexual abuse is far higher than you would expect from looking at the proportion of homosexuality within the adult population in general.
Right.
I expect, and we're talking here primarily about homosexual men, because most child sexual abuse is committed by men.
Yeah, we're assuming that women are not molesting a lot of young boys.
Right, but there's a couple of facts that are really not in dispute. One is that fact that most child sexual abuse is committed by men, and the second fact is that about a third of the victims of child sexual abuse are boys. Not girls, but boys. So you have at least 30% of the cases involve men molesting boys. Now, on the face of it, that would suggest, since only about 3% of the population is homosexual, that would suggest a disproportionate rate of homosexual child abuse. Now, the way that the homosexual activists respond to this is by arguing that men who molest boys are not homosexual, that, in fact, they are... they are pedophiles. They are attracted to children, not attracted to men per se, not attracted to adult men, and so forth.
Yeah, well, 1 minute left, Peter.
Okay. Well, I urge people to read read the details in this pamphlet, because there is a significant overlap between adult homosexuality and male to boy sexuality, and. Also, within the homosexual movement itself, there is a tolerance of this, which suggests that it's not something completely separate from homosexuality. And in fact, I quote a lengthy excerpt from a lesbian writer, Paula Martinac, who's saying the lesbian and gay community will never be successful in fighting the pedophile stereotype until we all stop condoning sex with young people.
Right. And then there's also the factor, which I find bizarre, Peter, and I guess we're just going to go over our time here a little bit, but that's okay, of people like Don Lemon, who were molested by men when they were boys, and then they come out as, quote, gay, and they make no connection between the pederasty and their orientation. 10 seconds.
Yeah, well, and I will say that there also is an effort to narrow the definition of pedophilia and to say that that applies only to molesting small children. It's probably true that homosexual men are more interested in child molesters are more interested in those around the age of puberty, young adolescents, those around the age of adolescence, not in young children.
Yeah, I just think that the denial is incredible, and it's very sad. Of course, we pity these people, and our hearts go out to them, anybody who's been victimized by an adult. But then to turn around and say that has no connection to this embrace of behavior, which for most of human history was regarded as taboo and deviant, to say now there's no connection between the two is intellectually dishonest, I think.
Right. And so, again, I want to emphasize, we're not saying that all homosexuals
right.
are child molesters, but this link, this connection, undermines the idea that homosexuality is a normal, natural, and positive variant of human sexuality.
Right. Okay, Peter, well, listen, thanks so much for your time. And people, go to the website. It's frc.org. Peter, thanks so much, and we look forward to you continuing to stand for truth in the culture.
Thank you.
All right, God bless.